Good morning. I'm going to try my best to work with this mic. It may fall off my ear. Just excuse that if it happens, and we'll find out another way to get this done. But I'm very grateful to be here this morning, just considering how I got the chance to grow up in this church and get to be a part of the school, and just sitting back there and being a young kid, never imagining, you know, it would be in this position today. So I think it's just an awesome testimony to what God can do, and I'm just truly blessed. I also want to just thank the congregation here for welcoming Anna Gaines and myself into this new position. We've gotten letters from people. We've gotten handshakes and congratulations as we come in, and people just wishing us the best of luck. And we appreciate that so much that you're willing to do that and go through a confirmation of God's work in our life. So we're just so appreciative of that. So as I thought about what I would try to preach this morning, just this theme of the idea that God is greater, than the circumstances we come across,
kept coming back.
I believe, and hopefully this will be a great opportunity, a great reminder for you, a great opportunity, just how great our God is.
Just how great our God is compared to our circumstances.
As we come to this subject,
we have to consider perspective.
And perspective can change our perspective. And we can minimize our perspective. So what really influences our perspective of God? There's several things I think that does influence our perspective, but I try to pick three big categories that hopefully you in the audience can find yourself in. And I think there's three big things here. You have to consider how the past affects our perspective, how our present situation affects our perspective, and also think about our pursuit of sin. So those are the three topics, broad area, without getting too specific. So, in what way is God greater than our past? I think about the story of Joseph. We're going to go through that story, hopefully pretty quickly, to get to the point. But you think about the story of Joseph. He's born into this large family. And he is kind of the favorite, the chosen one, out of his brothers. His father loves him so much that he gives him the special coat of many colors. And because of that, his brothers envy him. Okay. And mind you, as we're talking about the past, I'm also wanting you to consider things that you've inherited that maybe weren't your choice. Okay. Joseph couldn't necessarily control that his father favored him. And also, Joseph had the special ability to interpret dreams, and he had these dreams where people were bowing down to him And his brother took offense to that. And they had this idea of Joseph that he just thought he was that he was just a special child, that he viewed him as a special child.
So what they decided to try to so what they decided to do was try to get rid of him. They wanted to kill him at first.
They wanted to kill him at first.
No, one brother steps in and says, let's not kill him.
Get some profit out of him.
So they actually get some profit out of him. So they actually end up selling him as a slave.
Again, Joseph. Is a product of something someone else did to him. His brothers put him outside of the family, sold him
into slavery.
And then we come up to the next point
where he is in Joseph's life,
where he is in Potiphar's house.
And he's still maintaining his integrity.
He works his way up. But unfortunately, Potiphar's wife lusts after him. He resists that temptation with the perspective of God. He says, I cannot do this. This would be a great offense against my God. Well, she becomes angry. She falsely accuses him. He goes to jail. And in the middle of this, you got to think that Joseph is really getting discouraged. He continues to have this perspective of God that is much bigger than the things happening to him. And he eventually gets to interpret the dreams of Pharaoh. He becomes second in all power of Egypt. And this is where Joseph has the realization, this great realization of what God has done with his past. That God is so much greater than the past hurts that other people have forced onto him. And his brothers, he says this to his brothers. He says, as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring about the present result, to preserve many people alive. And you think about that. Joseph has had these horrible things happen to him, sold into slavery, falsely accused and imprisoned.
And yet, he is able to see past those things.
He could have used those things as an excuse to turn and rebel against God. But he didn't.
You know what? I experienced some difficult times.
And you are the people who actually did it to him.
And you are the people who actually did it to him.
But he says, you know what?
Despite you doing those things, God still works through those things to accomplish.
So the encouragement for us is if we have a hand from our past, something that we need to inherit, something that we need to add in our life, the challenge is to enhance our perspective larger and see God as larger than that.
So as we go to the present,
I think of the story of Job.
If you think about it,
Job had everything. As far as we know, he didn't have that bad past. When the story starts with Job, we find out he's one of the wealthiest men in the whole planet.
He also has a great family, and he has a great position in society.
Everyone looks up to him as someone to be like. But then we know that takes a turn. Satan comes to God and basically says, I know Job praises you, but he only praises you because of the blessings that you've given him. And God allows Satan to take some of those blessings away, but God knows that Job is merciful. So that's what happens. Job loses all those things. He loses his wealth. He loses his place in that. He loses his family. It comes to the point where Job's wife even says, you know, Job, all you have left to do is curse God and die. How about you just go ahead and do that? That's all that's left. And as Job sits there, and he just wonders why. If you read the parts of Job, Job just constantly is wondering why. Why has this happened to me? What did I do? And he just struggles with this. And I think we all can identify with that, that when something's happening to us, that we just cannot comprehend why these evil things are happening to us. We want to know why. But it's really interesting to see what God does. So Job wants to know why, and he says, if only I could talk to God and reason this out. If only I could just talk to him and get the answers. And this is what happens. And so God does speak to him. But he answers him in a totally different way.
But he answers him in a totally different way.
Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now gird up your loins like a man, and I will ask you, and you will instruct me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who set its measurement? Since you know, or who stretched the line on it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars set together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy." So God's answer to Job's was who? Instead of giving the answer to why, God gave himself.
He didn't explain the reason. He didn't explain the reason. He didn't explain him and Satan and what they talked about. He told him. He said, Job, you see everything that I've created. You see the tops of the mountain. Do you see the tops of the mountain? I told this mountain it can go this high. I told this mountain it can go this high. Do you see the ocean? Do you see the ocean?
I told it where to stop.
I tell the ocean where to stop. And he just goes on and on.
He goes on and verse after verse and chapter after chapter and verse after verse and he just goes on and verse after verse and on and 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 So the encouragement is, if we are experiencing these difficulties, rather than trying focusing on the why, we always want to know why. Let us focus on who is in control and who has solved all these problems. If someone, God can create the whole universe with all these complexities in it, can he not also handle our troubles?
So we've talked about the past, talked about the present.
And we have one more step here, and that's our pursuit of sin. Talk about pursuit of sin. I talk about this for not only Christians, but non-Christians alike. As we become a Christian, of course, God gives us the Holy Spirit, helps us combat those sins that gets in the way, us getting closer to Him. But also, as Christians, we know we still struggle. Just because we become a Christian doesn't mean all our sinful habits, our sinful desires, our sinful thoughts just immediately are gone. So God has provided, I think, in two major ways for not only the consequence of our sin. So the consequence of our sin is that we are separated from God and separated from Him eternally. Okay. So the provision for that is, of course, Jesus who died on the cross. So Jesus eliminates the consequence of our sins, but also our sins, that there may be consequences, but also we continue to struggle. So that's where I think this verse comes into play. This is Romans 8, 31 through 32. What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who is against us? He who did not spare His own Son, but delivered Him over for us all, how will He not also with Him freely give us all things? So, it doesn't stop with the cross. And I think we really beat ourselves down, especially down.
You know, I'm saved by grace.
You know, I'm supposed to be one of God's adopted children.
Yet I was one of God's adopted children.
Yet I'm sins that I had
even before.
I became a Christian.
Why is?
And I think this gives us great encouragement.
God would not only send His Son.
God would not only send His Son,
but He's willing to send our Son
for the consequences of our sin.
He's also willing to give us more.
He's willing to help us.
He's willing to walk side by side with us as we come through life,
as we experience difficulties.
So as we kind of recap
the pursuit of sin,
we have the pursuit of sin,
the present,
those things,
the past and
affect,
those things,
our view of
affect
God. I want you to look at this picture.
So it may be hard to see, especially if you're in the back, you probably can't see all that's going on here.
But I enjoy pictures like this because they take a lot of looking in different places to see what's going on.
Maybe the first thing, especially in the back, you can only see that there's a picture of a man's face, and he's got this wild Albert Einstein looking hair going on.
But if you can actually look closer, you have two guys on a horse, which make up his face, his eyes, the top of his head is actually a windmill, and there's a windmill rotating in the back.
And there's also some pictures in the background of some smaller faces and people who make up those faces.
Now what does this have to do with our perspective of God and how God is greater?
Well, if I'm only looking, it's really hard to see the head. If I'm only looking at the head, it's really hard to see the horseman.
And if I were to take, hey, look, if I showed you the picture, and beforehand I said, this is going to be a picture of an old man with crazy hair and has an interesting mustache,
then you would look for that immediately when I put the picture on the screen.
And sometimes we do the same thing with God.
We don't look and we don't see God in His fullness.
We're too busy focusing on these small details to see the big picture of how God can work in these circumstances in our lives.
And this is a modern example of just how God can work through all of these situations.
So maybe two or three weeks ago, in a youth room, we watched a movie, Unbroken: Path to Redemption. If you get a chance, there's a book and two movies. I highly recommend you read, but as a short recap of the movie.
There's a guy named Louis Zamperini. He was incredibly fast in high school. He could run super fast. And just out of high school, he competed in the Olympics. Not only did he have this great talent, but he also had a willing and great military talent. He ended up going into the Air Force. So he goes into the Air Force, and he becomes the pilot of these huge bombers. He's with his crew, and they get a mission to go basically a rescue mission, go find a plane that has fallen down somewhere.
But actually, the plane they take is a jump. So they get in this plane, and when they're searching for this other plane, their plane goes down, and it lands in the middle of the ocean. And him and only three people of the crew, I think it was about 11-man crew,
survived.
And they survived, and they lived on this raft. One of the guys ends up dying because of starvation and some of the other issues they faced. But they stayed on this raft for 47 days. And to make things worse, on the 47th day, they landed in Japanese territory. Immediately were captured and taken in as prisoners of war. They stayed in that camp
and it was one of the most notorious camps just for the cruelty and harshness of some of the guards who were over that camp. So he has, and actually his family just thought he was dead. I hadn't heard from him in so long. The government wrote them a check for $10,000 on behalf of his death. But after the war, they found him. He was rescued. He came back home, and, you know, of course, there was a huge celebration. Everyone thought he was dead. But he obviously faced some very difficult circumstances because of all that had happened. He started to have terrible nightmares, suffered from PTSD, and he also couldn't find a job. Because he didn't finish college, it kind of limited some of his opportunities to gain employment. He was married, and he had a kid, and just life was happening, and he just had so many things going on in his life that made it difficult for him to be a part of life. Not only that, he developed a drinking habit. He became an alcoholic. And it's really funny as we watch this movie, and there are scenes where, you know, he would go to his stash and he would pull out the bottle, and the kids in the youth group were like, no, don't drink it, don't drink it. You know, just trying. They wanted him so bad to get over this. And so he has all these things going on. He has his past, that the fact that he was shipwrecked and all these different things. And then he has the present situation where he can't find a job. And then he has his pursuit of sin to become an alcoholic. And he has all these things working against him. Yet God is still working.
Yet God is
at the same time. Billy Graham was going around the country, and
preaching. Louis wandered his way into one of these meetings.
And he looked at Christ, committing to Christ.
Immediately, he saw a change.
He saw
in his perspective a change of God. He quit alcohol. His nightmares decreased.
He also began to serve God. He became a great advocate
for troubled teens.
So this is the God that existed in the story of Joseph, that existed in the story of Job, that he did for Zamperini. He can do that for us today. I've got a quote, and it's in the bulletin if you'd like to follow along. This comes from A.W. Tozer. It says, "What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. Worship is pure or base, as the worshiper entertains high or low thoughts of God. For this reason, the greatest question before the church is always God himself. And the most pretentious fact about any man is not what he at a given time may say or do, but what he in his deep heart conceives God to be like." And I encourage you to really think on that. Read it slow. And I just want to leave with this last challenge for something you to consider. How big is your God? How great is he? Is he greater than your circumstances right now? Is he greater than your past? Is he greater than your pursuit of sin? If you would like to proclaim God's greatness this morning, we would definitely encourage that. If you need spiritually prayer to be lifted, to be encouraged, we would love to do that for you. Please do that as we stand and sing.